Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, you're listening to the DPC podcast, the podcast where we talk about all things Dead Parent, the good, the bad, and the banter. Hosted by
Sam
and Kat. This week on the Dead Parent Club podcast, Sam and I had the pleasure of talking with Tamara Smith, who owns The Grieving Mind, which is a grief coaching service. Tamara talks to us about her own various losses and how they came to build The Grieving Mind as a platform, which is also called a compassion through community, and we all know how important that is. So her mission is to raise awareness about grieving by creating a new platform and understanding for the bereaved and their grieving mind. And I love the way she talks about this as, you know, our mind has completely altered because of grief and it needs to be treated as such. So she talks about all the things that she went through after her numerous losses and how she now helps other people. So really hope you enjoy this episode. Make sure you stay tuned throughout all of it and check her out. Perfect. Right then, we shall start. So yeah, Tamara, if you could give a brief kind of introduction to yourself, like your name, where you're from, what you do, and then we'll go into kind of like your experience of grief, basically.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So my name is Tamara Smith. I am the owner and founder of thegrievingmind.com. I experienced, I think it was 5 or 6 major losses back to back from December 2009 to April 2010. I lost my mother in December. She was at the long end of a battle with cancer. So she had become diagnosed 10 years earlier. She was cancer free for 5 years, and then it came back. And when it came back, it came back pretty bad. So I was expecting that loss. I was preparing myself for that loss. In fact, I began to mentally rehearse saying the words after my mom died, because I knew it was going to be really difficult for me. That same month, my divorce was final. And in the winter, my business partner and I were we were in the middle of wrapping up a business that we were running. This was 2010, there's a long story behind that, but we were basically sold a franchise. It wasn't really a franchise. It was fraudulent activity by the franchisor. The other business owners and us got together and we had to sue. It was a really long process. And again, I'm going through this as I'm taking care of my mother that's dying. Also during that time period, my brother was mentally ill. He was severe bipolar with schizoaffect, and he was in and out of sobriety, in and out of homes, and homeless at different times. And after my mom died, he just didn't know what to do with himself. He couldn't take it. So he and my father got into an argument on February 26th, and they had a physical altercation. My brother stole the vehicle, and he went to the police department that my dad worked at, that my dad had retired from. And was calling him from that location. And my dad is a private investigator. And he was really afraid that my brother was going to hurt somebody because he was off of his meds and manic. He was in a severe manic episode. Mm-hmm. So he told, you know, when he called it in, he said, look, he's off his meds. I am a PI and I have my gun in the car. So please be careful and just get him into custody. And I don't think that they were properly debriefed on what the situation was. I don't think they understood that the man that they were chasing was the son of an ex-cop. And so, yeah, they there was a 10-car police chase. They pulled him over. He had his hands on the steering wheel the entire time. He never had his hand on the gun. The gun was still in the glove compartment when they found it. And one of their guys got trigger happy and they pulled the trigger first. And so, yeah, so he was killed that morning. Knowing that my brother was not like, would never want to hurt anybody other than having a physical altercation with my father that night. He and my dad really did not have a good relationship for a very long time. When we had the ballistics done on the car, my dad hired a private CSI team, and he had bullet wounds in his hands. So we knew that he was innocent. So my father sued the police department and they settled out of court. So that happened 3 months after I lost my mom. Yeah, nothing could have prepared me for that. Statistically, people that are mentally ill, particularly that have bipolar disorder, they don't live very long lives. And I knew he probably was going to die young, but of course I never expected it to be in this horrific way. Yeah. After that happened, my mother's sister was under the, I don't know how she thought this, but it was shocking to me again. She was under the assumption that she was going to be receiving my mother's house, which she never was. That was never written into my mom's living trust. And so she went into the house and started remodeling my mom's house. And she basically tried to steal it out from under me is basically what they were doing. But so that was just another thing that I had to do. And that was like a month after I lost my brother. My whole life was just turned inside out. It's just, you know, I had to work really hard to get out of my grief because it was just so much at once. It was just too much for the brain to handle.
Wow.
So
how old are you at this point?
I was 37 at the time.
What about other family members? Was it just you and your brother, or did you have any, or do you have any other siblings?
Yes, I have. I have two other stepbrothers that I have from my father's third marriage. but we grew up with them, so I'm pretty close to both of them. And they took it really hard. Also, you know, it was just awful to have to go through that. They're men, and men grieve in a different way. It's very sad to me. From what I've seen, men won't even typically, they won't even admit that they're grieving. You know, they might say they're stuck or lost or confused, or, you know, they might have all the symptoms, but we don't make it safe for men to be vulnerable, you know? And that's a big problem. And that's something that I hope to also change with the grieving mind.
Yeah, us two are really passionate about that, because the majority of our audience is female, and you can't help but feel like it's because some men probably find it harder to interact with these kind of platforms.
Mm-hmm. And also what I found is, you know, I've had some men reach out to me through my own social media community, And they'll tell me, hey, I've been watching your stuff for the last six. They won't like anything. They won't comment on anything because God forbid someone else see them being vulnerable, right? That's how bad it is. Mm. But they'll reach out to me personally and send me a private message. That tells you the level, the high level of anxiety they must experience around vulnerability.
And they won't message you until they've sat and watched your account for months on end.
So just because you're not, you might have male followers or male listeners that you might not ever know about, because it's just that they might not feel safe.
That's so true. That is so true.
What was the journey from being in kind of the depths of all of this tragedy at once? How does that translate into the grieving?
Sure. You know, I fumbled around pretty bad for the first 2 years of that. I mean, it was, as you know, it's a daily struggle. It's the first thing that you think of in the morning. It's awful. And the ruminating is suffocating, truly suffocating. I made a lot of bad decisions. I was self-destructive for a while. I was just lost. And at the time, I didn't realize that I had come to be such a caretaker of my mom and my brother. I didn't know that I was identified as their caretaker. I didn't know that that had become a part of my identity. So when I no longer had them to take care of, I didn't know what to do with my time. It was a relief, but also there was this huge void there. So I had to figure out what to do with myself. Mm. I had to basically create a system of self-care. So I was meditating every day. I had access to, it's called an alpha stim device. So it's a device that you clip onto your ears and it literally increases the alpha brain waves in your brain while you're wearing it.
So what does that mean?
It puts you into this really wonderful meditative state that is extremely calming. It's used to actually treat, there's no side effects at all. So it's used to treat depression and anxiety and insomnia. I didn't have insomnia, but I definitely was having a lot of anxiety. And then I would pair that. So I would wear my alpha stim device and I would pair that with a binaural beats meditation, which is a pineal gland stimulator. So with those two things together, I was able to rewire my brain using those two things and with the meditation. And then I was taking my dog on walks in the evenings for about 2 hours. Yeah. And during that time, I would listen to Eckhart Tolle, The Power Now, and which really helped me focus on, you know, life now and what's going on now. I was also listening to a lot of other YouTube videos. I wasn't listening to podcasts at the time, but now, of course, I would. But just a lot of reading, a lot of studying, a lot of meditating.
Were you working at this point?
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, but my self-care was, I mean, it was almost like its own part-time job, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to.
Yeah.
I was spending, easy 20 hours a week just getting myself better. I had so much all at once. My brain just couldn't, it was just too much. And I knew that I had to handle it.
It's scary. The sheer impact it can have on your well-being, especially for yourself, like going through that amount of trauma in such a short period of time.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if you guys had, and this, I've heard this with a lot of, you guys both lost your dads?
No, I lost my mom.
Okay, because I've been reading that losing your mother is different from losing your father. I haven't lost, my father's still alive. But I had such a visceral reaction to losing my mother. It was shocking. It was the most raw, and I don't think I expected that. And in some of the grieving groups that I contribute to from time to time, I hear the same experience. It's very interesting. And you know, we come from their DNA. So, and this person is like no longer physically with us. So there's got to be something to that. I don't know what it is. yeah, it was very intense.
Your parents as well, like you just always see them as invincible. Like you literally never, ever think or imagine that they're going to die. Or if you do, you think that you're going to be really old by the point that they die as well. And it will be like their time.
You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I feel like I was young losing my mother at 37. I felt like that was really young. I mean, and that's so, and for you both to lose your parents in your, in when you were 20, I mean, that's, you have your entire life ahead of you.
Yeah. But, it's funny because doing this podcast has actually kind of at the same time given us perspective and also made us feel lucky because like we've spoken to people who lost their parents as babies, people who never knew their mum or like, and people who lost their parents when they were like 9, 10 years old. And I just, it's that kind of grief, like everybody's grief is just so different, isn't it? But when you're grieving somebody that you've hardly even know, I find that must be really hard to navigate.
I can't even imagine that. Yes. I have a big soft spot for children. And when they lose their parents so young like that, I mean,
it's heartbreaking.
That's heartbreaking. Yeah. But you know, one of the best things that I've been able to do, and I don't know if you guys have had this experience too, or if you have sought this out, but after my mom died, my great aunt, she's my great aunt Patty. She's amazing. She came to my mom's house and she was 70. She was 73 at the time. Came to my house for an entire week, brought lunch, and she helped me clean out the house 8 hours a day. And so she and I became really close after that, and it was wonderful. And so I've been able to cultivate this amazing relationship with her. I see her. I try to see her once a month. She sends me text messages. it's been wonderful. And I would not have had that, you know, I was living my life. She lives an hour and a half away. You know, so it was just, that was one of the most beautiful things that came out of that was getting to know my great aunt and what a phenomenal person she is.
Yeah. A very similar thing happened to me with, my cousins and my auntie. Before my mum died, we weren't that close. Like we're a close family, but I would never spend time really one-on-one with them. But now like my cousins are like my sisters and my auntie has been such a massive support for me. So it's amazing how such an awful thing can happen, but then you can appreciate these new relationships so much more.
Yes, absolutely. And so what I like to do is I try to encourage people that have lost, you know, someone that close to them to seek out new relationships like that, that you can still experience and have this beautiful, joyful love with. Because you know, we've lost that significant parent relationship doesn't mean that we can't experience those types of relationships in other forms later on.
Yeah, I love that. So at what point then were you able to kind of see what needed to happen to kind of like move through this grief? I know you mentioned that you said, like traditional therapy wasn't for you. So at what point did you seek out that therapy? And then how did you realize that that wasn't for you? And then how did that then translate into helping others through?
You know, I saw a traditional, we call them LMFT here in the United States, is a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I probably should have been seeing someone that had a practice in grief. But again, I was in so much trauma, I couldn't even think of that. So I just knew it was up to me. I don't know. I knew that going to see someone would help a little bit, but because I'd been through so much in such a short period of time, I knew, and because it was all so shocking and traumatic, I was going to have to work. The level of my commitment was going to have to be as high as the trauma was. So when I did, when I was doing searches at the time, this was 10 years ago now, and this is before, I think this is before even Instagram was around, and Facebook was brand new. There were no groups, there was no social support. I think I went to one grieving group and it was okay, but I also had a hard time relating because everyone there had had just one loss, and it wasn't, they didn't have the compounded, complex grief that I had. So it was actually through that summer of 2012, just coming to this realization, like, yeah, your mind is completely different when you're grieving. You are not yourself. And that needs to be addressed, and it's identity work. And, you know, I had to unwind a lot of, limiting beliefs I had about grief. I think for a long time, it really, honestly, it wasn't until 5 years later, about 2000, the winter of 2016, I just was, you know, I was also doing a lot of, you know, woo-woo stuff. I was doing everything I could, right? So I went to sound healings. I hired an intuitive. I did anything and everything I knew how, and anything and everything I could figure out how to do. I did a couple float tank sessions. Yeah, it was just like, wow, this needs to be a business. This needs to be a service. There's not enough information out there. There's a lot of bad information. So yeah, I'm like, I'm doing it. And plus, I was going through multiple things at once. So there was legal, financial, and plus all the grief stuff on top of it, where your mind is really cloudy, not thinking right. You're forgetful. So, yeah, I was like, I'm going to make this a business someday. And it took me until 2016. I finally was like, wow, I came to this thing. I was like, I no longer need to hold on to this grief to prove that I love them.
Mm.
They know.
So true. I think a lot of people struggle with that.
A lot of people struggle with me for it because they think, well, if I'm happy, if I have a day where I enjoy myself, what is that? Does that mean I never love them? Of course not.
Mm.
Of course not. But it's such a weird thing. I mean, it literally took me that long to realize that. And I think that's true for many people. And, you know, I think I maybe was kind of in and out of victimhood, I'm sure. And I had a lot of anger. I had to really burn through a lot of anger over what had happened. So I did a lot of forgiveness work, a lot of journaling. And out of that journaling and forgiveness work and learning about complex PTSD, I had a little bit of PTSD around my brother's death and the way that it happened. So I think just in learning that, I'm like, we need to have a paradigm shift around grief, and I'm going to help do it.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
So where did you get the inspiration from then for the grieving mind? Like, did you see a grief coach or a transition coach yourself?
I wish I would have, because I would have been further along, you know, but no, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as a grief coach until, I met a good friend of mine. And she said, you know, you should speak to my friend. She's a grief coach. And I was like, what? That's a thing. You can hire someone to help you with it. She's like, yeah, so I spoke with her, and, she started off as a health coach. And while she was, doing her health coaching, her mom got cancer and her mom died. So she uses, as I do, I use neuro-linguistic programming, to help my clients, out of their, grieving mind, essentially. So, yeah. So neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, or coaching, is more focused on where the person is now in their lives. You might do a little bit of personal history, but it's not focused in the past. It's just around creating strategies to help them get to where they want to go. And, you know, in the case of grief, is sometimes it's heavy identity work. It's refiguring out who you are now without them in your life. You know, whether it's a death or a job that you lost or finances or a home. I mean, you know, sometimes people become very identified with what they do for a living, or, you know, or have, you know, if you're a mom and you lost your child and you're really heavily identified with being a mother, I mean, these are big, big life shifts for people. They don't know how to navigate that, because I think mostly it's because we're just kind of always going through life and going through the motions. We don't really think, we don't stop we don't have time sometimes to have those introspective moments where we do consider who we are and who we would like to be and where our life is going. And it's these major pivotal moments that I believe are our lightning bolt of opportunity to completely change the course of our lives for the better. That's the golden opportunity there that I think people miss, because we all know that we're going to have loss. We all know that. We know that we're going to lose our parents someday. And sometimes that someday comes way too soon. Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel that around, you know, we just, because no one ever does speak positively of death, right? Which, you know, it's not a happy thing, but because most of the time, especially in like our situations, like losing a parent, like, yes, everyone loses a parent, but people don't really start talking about it as like a normal thing until much later on in life when everyone's parents start dying. So it's like no one, and so when you tell someone that hasn't lost a parent that you've lost a parent, their immediate reaction is like, oh my God, that's so sad. That's the worst thing in the world. Like, I don't know what I'd ever be able to do. I could not live without my parent, blah, 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 blah. So you're just getting all this negativity from everyone else as well, which is like reinforcing your thoughts that this is a really terrible thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, because no one else can cope. So why should I be able to cope?
Exactly.
One of the things that I found really difficult as well, which you just kind of touched on, is we speak a lot about finding your new normal, like you said, because your life doesn't, you know, carry on as normal anymore, does it? So you have to, you know, forge your own path again. But I think what I found difficult, especially with losing a parent at university, is that your life is very structured at university, like the same people around you, the same lessons. Mm-hmm. It's very kind of routine. And going back into that routine after you've had such a life-changing kind of experience is really weird and hard, because you try and carry on as normal as if nothing has changed, but everything has changed.
Everything has changed. And that's why it's so important to, it's so critical to dive in and do that deep personal work so that you can refigure out who you are again. And yeah, there's definitely a period of finding your new normal. Mm. So there's, and I think it occurs in phases. It's, you have to find your new normal right after the, you know, it's probably the first couple of years after the loss. And then you come up again to a new normal. And then once you've really recovered, you really are back to yourself again. And it is absolutely possible. Absolutely. And it's worth it. It's worth the work. It's worth the time investment, and the resource investment. You know, sometimes we...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Sometimes we forget that we ourselves and our own very lives are worth that deep time and that deep self-love commitment. Mm. You know, sometimes I think it's because we're not taught that by our parents.
Yeah, we're not. We're by society in general, we're not taught that. Like, we're always taught to strive for the next best thing and to never settle, but it makes us not appreciate where we are now and appreciate ourselves where
that's
we are
right
now.
And actually, this is the most fun part. The journey is the fun part. You know, when you get to where you're going, usually it's like, okay, well, what's next now?
Literally, that is what it's like all the time. I'm
absolutely
sure you can agree, Sam.
Oh yeah, 100%. So when people come to you, Tamara, what kind of stage of their, I mean, I know there's no, I definitely don't agree that there are set stages of grief, but kind of where along that people's grief journey are they, and kind of like, how do they find you? Are they ready to kind of, are they like actively looking for a grief coach? They're like, right, I know that I need someone to help me get through this. And how, like, what's kind of those first few steps that you take someone through?
Yeah. Typically they are. And it depends, like, you know, I think that sometimes people need that first 6 months to a year to just go through the emotions of the grief. So if they're ready to work with a grief coach at that time, then that's great. But sometimes they're not. It also depends on the person. Do they have an internal locus of control or an external? Do they really know how much in charge of their own life and their own happiness they are? Because sometimes people, when they've been through a heavy loss like that, it's easy to fall into victimhood. We have this thing that comes up like, why me? Why did this happen to me? They're typically, you know, they could be anywhere in that process. They could be coming upon a process. Like they could, I mean, have a friend that just lost her partner of 13 years, and you know, I knew this was going to be difficult, and she had also begun to prepare herself mentally for it. They could come to me at any point in that process. And they're usually searching for help because they know their symptoms are really bad. They're not sleeping. They're grumpy. They're full of anger and they get fired from their job. It's usually something. Usually with most people, they have to be really pushed to a point of pain until they seek help.
Can we discuss this, like preparing yourself mentally before the event has happened? What do you suggest for people for that? Because I find that really interesting because I'm quite big at the moment on like kind of like building like mental resilience, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, especially if you know it's coming. I mean, and you know you have a parent that's very sick, and you know that you're going to be having these conversations after the death occurs. I started to say to myself, after my mom died, it was really tough, but you know what? I got myself back and I had to work at it, but I did. So I knew I had to lay down that road for myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew I had to see it first. I had to hear it. I had to believe in it so that I could make it happen. I think that's very helpful if a person can start to do that for themselves if they know a death is imminent.
Yeah, I think I found that's kind of advice I kind of wish that I'd had before my mum died, was like building routines into my life that will help me afterwards, or like just start to practice them rather than kind of starting from scratch, like a few months after she died and realizing that I was like, shit, I'm not coping.
Yeah
well, that's the thing though, isn't it? Like, you never know how you're gonna feel at that point. Like if I'd have known, I didn't have anyone at the time that could have said to me, Sam, you're going to feel like this, so just a heads up, you should probably start going to the gym before your dad dies. You know, like things like that, or start journaling now, yeah, rather than like three years down the line. But then you never know, like, especially if, I mean, it's definitely different if your parent dies suddenly, and we've spoken to a lot of people on the podcast that have been in that situation. But for me and Kat, it was, we both had time from finding out that our parents were terminal to when they actually died. So, yeah, I suppose there is more that we could have done, but you still, you're so consumed at that point just by the thought of your parent dying, that how can you even think past that to know
absolutely
that's what you need to do?
And if you're there, my situation was I was her caretaker. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's not time. You're running around doing doctor's appointments. And, you know, I was doing doctor appointments for two people, my brother and her, and managing him and his symptoms and trying to, you know, get him in housing. And I mean, it was, sometimes there's just no space. There's no mental space to do that. And I think that I was lucky because I knew that I needed to. So I would take moments and I would carve out time for myself, even if it was just an hour a week where I could begin to process my emotions around what was happening. So I think that was really helpful. And even when I was taking care of her, and I would be out at her home, I would drive out to her home and I'd stay with her 4 days and I'd come out to LA and then work really crazy, like 18-hour days for 3 days and go back out and take care of her. I would do walks while I was out there taking care of her, and that helped keep me sane because I just was able to listen to music and, you know, and do something that was positive for myself that I knew was going to pull up my endorphins and, you know, just help me get through it.
Yeah. So on the topic of getting through it, so I know on your website you have a section of how to help someone that is grieving, but what was the most helpful thing that someone did or said to you? And what advice would you give to anyone, especially kind of because, you know, for our age and for our audience, there are kind of different things that people need as well. What advice would you give to someone for how to help someone through?
You know, showing up is so important. Just showing up and just being there and not trying to fix what has happened. Because of course the emotions are normal, and a grieving person needs to walk through their own darkness. They have to. There's no getting around it. You can delay it maybe. you have to go through the emotions to get on the other side of it. It's the only way. It's like you can't. So sometimes just, you know, offering, you know, say, oh, hey, and you know, I've had situations where people don't answer the phone or they don't text back, or, you know, sometimes you just have to just show up at the front door. Oh, hey, I brought coffee. Let's have some coffee. Or, you know.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I don't think we're told enough, is that, look, sometimes we just can't get to the phone, or sometimes we just don't want to text people back. Like, we could have five or six people texting us and being like, oh, are you okay? What can I do to help? But in those times, like, you actually don't know.
That's right.
You could not even know yourself what you need. So someone just turning up, just ignoring the fact that we're ignoring you, and just go. Like, just go to their house, like you say.
That's
go
right.
Go to their room.
Offer to bring dinner, you know. I had a friend that said, you know, do you want me to come in? Do you want me to do your laundry? And even though I didn't take her up on that, I just really appreciated it. Just really appreciated it. Just anyone reaching out and just saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. I know this is tough. I'm here. And just checking in, you know, checking in is important. Helping out with practical stuff, you know, especially right after the loss, you know, you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you don't have the energy to go to this grocery store and make an actual meal.
So true.
So true.
So, I know you spoke about how you feel like you lost your identity a little bit after your mum and your brother died, because obviously you were a caretaker for them, which you didn't realise was your identity until afterwards. But so how would you identify yourself now that you've kind of been through all of this?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm a loving, kind, you know, gentle, generous human being that loves helping others, and is ready to help create a paradigm shift around loss and what it teaches us. I feel very grateful, to be honest with you. Those losses changed me for the better forever. And it wasn't like, yeah. I mean, I was a decent person before, you know, it wasn't that, but my heart just broke open with going through all that. And, you know, if apparently if that's what had to happen for that to happen, then okay. And if I can help to show other people how to do the same, that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, no, I can totally empathize with that. I think Sam and I always say, like, we are, as much as we would love to have our parent here, and as much as painful as it all was, like, we do like the people that we are now, and like the drive that it's given us, which is great, and it makes us so lucky, and it means that we're able to do stuff like this, which is amazing. So you spoke earlier about the grieving journal. So what is
that? Sure. Yeah. It's a grief journal that includes, I have a day. That's another thing. A daily gratitude practice. That was definitely something I needed to do to remind myself of all the great things that I still had in my life. So many. So there's a daily gratitude journal, piece of the journal in there. There is, I have writing prompts to help grievers process their emotions. And I also have, we call it in NLP, we call it future pacing. So it's a writing prompt that, helps you to try to begin to envision your future. 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because that was something that I absolutely could not do when I was in the crux of my grief. I just couldn't imagine what my future would be like. I also have, I have an artist, that I worked with, Laura Lynn Engel. She does, her website is, it's Art by Laura Lynn, and she does mandalas and doodles. And so I had her create all these mandalas and doodles so that, you know, for if the children wanted to, or if an adult wanted to do some coloring as they're processing their grief, just to get your mind off the ruminating, off the loss for even an hour, you know, that was one of the best things that I was able to do for myself too, is I was able to engage in activities that were highly immersive. So I had no choice but to truly just focus on what I was doing in the moment. So I think that's helpful, because when you're ruminating like that, and it's every minute of every day, it's hard to pull yourself out of that. And you need to be engaged in an activity that literally will not let you think about anything else other than what you're doing. So you at least get a mental break from the ruminating. It's a PDF. It's downloadable. If any of your listeners would like it, they can definitely reach out to The Grieving Mind at thegrievingmind.com and, just send me an email, say they would like, you know, a copy. I'll go ahead and send it right over. It's in PDF format. They can just print it from home. And I would love feedback if there's anything that they think that should be in there, and I'd love to change it. It's, you know, it's in its beginnings. This is volume one. So, I'd like to get it published, this year, actually, is what I'm looking to do.
So do they need to contact you to access it off the website? Yeah.
Yep. So they'll register on my website. I'm actually in the process of creating my own YouTube channel.
Oh, exciting. What's that going to be about?
It's going to be around, all the businesses and services and processes related to multiple different kinds of loss. Grief, divorce, infant death, job loss. So it'll be a lot of really helpful information out there. I'm working on building up my interviews now. So that's exciting.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And I have a bigger idea for it too, that I'm working on. So it's coming soon.
Oh, I look forward to hearing about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, these are all the things that we're not taught in school.
Yeah. So true.
You know, practical life stuff. I was very lucky when my mom's death was imminent, and even in the process and after, I had a business partner that was an older gentleman. He's a wonderful friend of mine, Bob Killen. He's a photographer, and I was able to go to him with questions, and he helped me, you know, do the legal part of it and get things filed. And, you know, I was lucky I had him. Like, and I always think about, what if I were your age? What if I was 20 and I didn't have someone like that to guide me through it? Where would I go? Where would I go for this information? Mm. Yeah. My idea is to build all of those things out, including the grief coaching services. And I'm looking at building a retreat also. So like a one day healing.
Sam and I were literally just talking about doing something similar, doing an event with the podcast, which would be great.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, it's you know, people are really hurting after loss, and they need to be able to go somewhere and have an experience where they can, you know, begin to recover.
And connect with people that have been through similar things, I think, is just such a big healer.
It is such a big healer to have someone that to have other people that understand. Because it's such an experiential thing. If you would have told me how I felt, how I was going to feel after I lost my mother, I probably wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah. Don't be such a drama queen. Like, I'm strong. I'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Little did you know.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, is there anything that you wanted to talk about whilst you were on here?
Anything that we haven't covered so far? That you really wanted to make sure that you got across?
God, yeah, just don't wait to get help, and don't wait to help yourself. It is not their intention for us to suffer. Mm. You know, they want us to get back to our lives. They want us to be happy.
Yeah.
And no matter what you've been through and how hard your losses were, you do deserve to be happy again, you know, and you're worth it.
I definitely... love the part about, you know, they, you know, whoever they is that's passed, you know, they would hate for us to just be kind of sat, you know, sad for the rest of our lives. They don't want that. They, you know, want us to continue to thrive.
Absolutely.
And find a way through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Find our happiness. Oh, amazing. So unfortunately we're gonna have to wrap it up, but I feel like there's still so much more we could dive into.
I've got to go to work tomorrow. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining us. I've got so much insight from that, and I'm so excited to see. We'll definitely get hold of the PDF.
Definitely. And thank you so much for doing this project, you guys. This is beautiful, and I hope it leads to amazing things for you guys. And, you know, maybe down the road we can collaborate on something. We'll see.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, definitely. We'll stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, I hope this is wonderful what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing your story. I mean, we know it takes a lot. It's not easy to do. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much, girls.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's DPC podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have and have found some comfort in the stories that you've heard today.
If you've resonated with anything we've said, have any questions, or want to get involved, please do contact us. We are on Instagram. It's @DPCpodcast. You can email us on dpcpodcast@hotmail.com, or we have a contact form on our website, www.dpcpodcast.co.uk.
We have a whole bunch of resources over on our website. More information about dealing with grief, losing a parent, and professionals to contact if you should need it.
Because as Kat so eloquently said in our first podcast, we're not providing healthcare, we're just chatting shit.
If you think this podcast could help someone, then we would love for you to share it.
We upload new podcasts every week, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out.
Loads of love
from Sam
and Kat.
See you next Tuesday.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.